Hey, Matthew, I've got a question for you. You think you could do 3,214 push-ups?
If you gave me a little bit of a time.
What about if I said you could do it over 23 days?
Okay, I'm going to give it a pretty good crack.
Right. Okay, well, today we are joined by Nick Hudson from the Push-Up Challenge. Nick, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be on here today.
One of the motivations behind this podcast for myself and Matt is not only to talk about our lives as builders, because it can be quite stressful, but we're also talking about how stressful it can be. We've got a big emphasis on mental health. You know, I've shared some personal journey, personal stories for myself. You know, I'm diagnosed anxiety disorder, diagnosed ADHD. You know, I've quite often ride a bit of a roller coaster from month to month. But enough about me. I would love to hear about you and the story behind the push-up challenge.
My journey with mental health began when my dad had his own, journey with depression. I was out at a restaurant with my parents one night, and dad, as he often does, went off to pay the bill. Left there sitting with mum, and all of a sudden, mum just starts crying. Starts bawling her eyes out. Oh my gosh. Thinking, what have I done? What have I said? Was the meal that bad? Reached across the table and said, oh, mum. And grabbed mum's hand and said, oh, mum, you okay? What's going on? She said, Nick, I can't keep it a secret any longer. I have to tell you, your dad has depression. And I knew nothing about depression at this time. Nothing. I didn't know how to respond other than I could see the bad state that mum was in and thought, oh, okay, obviously this is bad. And just went with it, just, you know, listened and let her say her thing. Dad comes back to the table a few minutes later. Yeah, mum's still quite teary and dad's, you know, oh, well, what's going on? What happened? And mum said, oh, I had to tell Nick that, you know, you've got depression. And dad's head just sunk. And he looked ashamed. And that really saddened me. Like many guys or girls, you know, dad's the hero. And hearing that, you know, he was in a bad way, you know, hit me really hard. It turns out that dad had been suffering from depression for a long time, 15, 20 years, something like that. Mum and him had been keeping it a secret from my brother and I, you know, all those years. When all this came out, I felt, well, in a way, I was a little bit disappointed with mum and dad for not telling me. But again, I had no idea what depression was, so I needed to learn. I respected they didn't tell me, and hats off to mum in particular. I mean, dad had been going through a super rough ride, and hats off to mum for shouldering all that, you know, for helping dad navigate all that and trying to keep the household together and put on a smiling face and all that whilst my brother and I were navigating school. So that was my first experience with depression and mental health, which was, yeah, an eye-opener for me at that stage. And again, I was coming from a baseline of knowing almost zero about mental health. So that's where my journey, I guess, began.
It's quite a challenging conversation, probably for you to have in your own head as well, because you're probably not wanting to then put the burden back on your parents to add more pressure to them. So not only are you trying to there, because you said this, well, I've literally written this down, you've written the word, you said the word listened. You said it was just such a key thing to doing that time, but whilst you're there to support your dad and your mum and probably airing that conversation is also a positive and to move in the right direction, you probably also then had to start going through, well, now how do I process this in my head without putting that back on them?
That listening thing, it's so important, right? Men and women, but particularly for men. Are you okay? I've got some really good tools about this, but the listening thing, just being able to make someone feel heard and to hear your emotions validated, right, and understood by another, can be so powerful.
If I'm thinking about, I guess, the time frame, so that was 20 years ago, you know, just out of school, and you're saying that your dad was experiencing this for 15 to 20 years, like you were a young kid when he was going through this. And if I think about my dad, and I think that our parents are probably of a similar age and similar generation, why do you think that our parents' generation seem to be so stoic about this and see shame in admitting these things?
It's part of that cultural evolution, right? I'm sure there's things in generation before theirs that that they look back on and go, oh, how the hell do you operate like that? I don't know the answer.
I was going to say, I wasn't actually expecting you to come back with an answer because I've thought about it a lot, and I don't think that even your dad or even my parents or my dad or even his parents could answer the question as to why. And I don't know if you've got kids, but I've got kids. Matt's about to have his first kid. And the narrative that our kids are actually having these days around mental health is wildly different to what it was like when I was that age. And the conversations that we're having, what makes me happy, I guess, in a way, is that we're seeing this change in generation of that communication and the way that we're actually talking about mental health. And now that it's actually just, I'm not going to say it's normal. I don't think we're quite there yet, particularly in our industry, but there is a change in this narrative around mental health. And when we're actually feeling these feelings, we're actually talking about them.
There's certainly cultural change. It'd be really interesting to see how that changes, you know, over the next couple of generations. When you ask the question of, you know, what was so different with the last generation, or what caused that stoic, you know, behavior and that lack of openness there, I think if we knew the pure answer to that in its completely scientific form, that would significantly help us today in unraveling that. It'd be interesting to see how the next generation goes. And I am scared and nervous about the next generation, as well as I am excited and hopeful. I mean, I'm loving all these good chats that are happening and complete change. What seems to be like complete change in how we tackle this. Well, I you know, with social media and information just being so readily available, along with the good, there's bad in that as well. So I'm excited about the future, but also a little bit nervous, you know.
And it's totally understandable. And you know, I'm sure Matt's having these thoughts too with his, you know, child on the way too, and myself with two, and I'm expecting a third. I'm going to just add one more thing to what you just said then, Nick. There's people like you out there who are making a real change, that are blocking out all that other noise, because we can't stop that. Like I always say to my team, and I say to if anyone ever asks me for business advice, is to focus on the things that you can control. And I kind of feel like what you're doing with the push-up challenge is actually focusing on something that you can control, and you're putting out a positive message. So I agree with you. There's lots and lots of noise out there. There 100% is. But it's people like you and organizations like the Push Up Challenge who are actually going to make a really big change. So I think as best as you can, try and block out that noise. It's going to exist. It always exists. But know that there's also people like you who are going to help change that narrative and change the way that people are thinking about it.
I really appreciate you saying that. And look, it's going to be a team effort here, right? It's going to take, a village, all these different individuals, all these different organizations working towards that cultural change and working towards those individual changes. But I will layer in this, which I think is hopefully building on your previous point. Life is hard. Life is challenging. Bad stuff is going to happen, right? People get sick. People die. People lose jobs to it. Yeah, bad grades at school, break up with your partner, friends break up with their partners. Bad stuff happens. So understanding that bad stuff happens, what do we do about that? How do we prepare ourselves for that? And I'm not talking about preparing yourself financially or anything like that, but I'm talking about, you know, emotionally. I'm talking about mental fitness. How do we prepare ourselves, build up that mental fitness? So when those bad things happen, sure, you know, we mourn, we learn, we kick ourselves, all that sort of stuff. But we're strong enough to get through it in a reasonable state. And there are times where, I don't know, I've been through those periods where it feels like, geez, this week or this month or this year, I've been hit with just so many things. So many bad things, and I know this is easier said than done, but at the end of the day, I know I've got a choice to, I can let those things get me down. And, you know, sometimes they really do get me down. Or I can try and do what I can to lift myself back up. Now, I know there might be some people watching this podcast or listening or other people talking about this and going, yeah, righto, well, sometimes people just can't. And I understand that. Sometimes you're in such a bad state. And we are lucky to live in a country where there are some pretty good services available to us out there to help us, you know, get out of those really rotten states. So I'd be encouraging people who are in that really bad place to, you know, reach out to those services to get help. But if you are in a good way, think about what you can do to improve your mental fitness, you know, today in terms of diet, exercise, time with others, time outside, that sort of thing, and support the mental fitness of others as well.
I also want to add in sleep to that one. I feel like sleep's a really important thing. I think that's something that also gets missed a huge amount with this sort of these conversations.
Sleep is absolutely number one. I had a period a few years ago where I was running on about 2 hours sleep for a couple of weeks, and I was going insane. Going absolutely insane. And I wasn't until I spoke to a doctor about it and got a bit of help, got to help steady that ship. I was trying to solve all these problems. And I was trying to, I was focusing on my exercise, my diet, all these things. My sleep was out of control bad. I know, Matt, on the eve of having a child, this is
just rip the band-aid off here, rip it off.
Yes.
but sleep is number one. If you're not well rested, it's going to be really hard to make those decisions, to regulate your emotions, all those sorts of things. And, you know, I know it might be hard for a young family, but it's something people need to focus on.
So the proportion of sort of a health expenditure that's dedicated to mental health, it lags behind a lot of the spending, say, to cardiovascular disease, respiratory. Why is that?
I don't know the answer. There's a number of things that can be done in the mental health space. The preventative end is just so important. So rather than up the acute end, right, where we also need support, but up the preventative end, we also need investment. You know, we need the good behaviours put in place. There's a study that was done recently about the impact of, you know, long-term focus on mental health. So, you know, interventions over extended period of time, we're talking about years, having a positive impact. And if you look at that an intervention of that duration, the investment behind that's going to be significant, right? It might be hard for the government to, you know, to be able to justify to itself around. I mean, the numbers should say otherwise, but it might be hard to govern. If you look at cardiovascular disease and, you know, cancer, they get a lot of funding, as they should.
But the reason the funding comes from that, because if someone can develop a tablet or a system to cure these diseases, it's highly profitable. Just look at, like, for example, a COVID vaccine, major money made out of creating a vaccine. The issue with, say, mental health, there's no vaccine and there's never going to be a magic pill. So from an investment perspective, the return on income is never going to be there. That's the harsh reality from an investment. When a government's going to look at something or a company is going to look at something, are they going to get an ROI on it? The answer is probably not, but they will along the line somewhere, because these can lead to other issues within lives and domestic violence and assault and all these other things. But I totally agree on your comment around being preventive. Like, everything we should be preventive, not reactive. And I have a personal opinion. Like, didn't we just see recently it decreased from the governments around the amount of mental health sessions that someone can get, that dropped it from 20 down to 10. The reality is most people, the people we are probably around a lot of the time, can afford it. There's so many people that can't access this and don't have the money to access these things. And it just puts so much pressure on all these non-profits to lift that burden.
It does. And it's unfortunate that the people who may really need it can't afford those sessions, which just creates a spiral of not good. It's challenging when you've got so many, you know, competing causes out there. Good causes, but they are in a way competing.
I think the tricky part about mental health is that there's so many different contributing factors that what might lead to you feeling in a certain way. This might be a really great segue into you talking about your experience with a physical health problem, which I would imagine has led into a depressive period. I might just throw over to you, Nick, just to maybe talk about that and probably, you know, start talking about like the genesis of where like the push-up challenge came from, because I feel really great when I'm training, when I'm physically active, you know, and I know that that makes me feel good. And I actually love the connection between mental health and fitness. So could you maybe share with us, I guess, way back, maybe after you're hearing about your dad and your personal experience?
Number of years later, I was winter, and myself and mates wanted something new to do. I mean, we were exercising a fair bit, but we wanted to do something else. So I challenged the guys to take on a stack of push-ups over a month. It worked really well. We got fit along the way, had a bit of fun with it, but it was an unintended consequence during the challenge, during this thing that we were doing. You'd wake up in the morning, it'd be 6:30. And we had this little app that I built to help us track our push-ups. It was really, really basic, but it worked, and it was great. And everyone would put their push-ups in there. So again, you wake up in the morning, you fire up the app, and you see that, for instance, Hamish had already banked 60 push-ups. You're like, what? It's 6:30, Hamish. I know you're a bit of a machine, but how have you managed to do 60 push-ups? And so you message the group. Hamish would inevitably say, the kids woke me up at 4. So I thought, why not? I was going to smash out a few now. And so the conversation would start about push-ups, right? And then evolve into other things. And, it'd come to 10 a.m., check on the app, fire up the app, see Matt, still hadn't done any push-ups. Matt. Classic Matt, come on, mate.
Internet's not working, can't download it.
Again, the conversation would start about push-ups, but then evolve into life things, about kids, about girlfriend, partner, whatever. And so I found this challenge kept us really well connected, because we're all busy, right? We've got families, we're extended families, we've got our partners or our mates or work, whatever, and catching up with some mates or some people, it can be hard. And this way of staying connected worked really well. We live in the era of group chats, right? And I look at how many of my social groups are just based around group chats now, and how much that sort of drives social activity. So I thought, well, maybe it's something more in this. Maybe we can get more people involved, get them better connected, have a bit of fun with it, get them fit. And that's, you look at the Venn diagram of good things, right? All those things connected, it's good stuff. So I put a bit more effort into it and got some more mates involved, got their friends involved. And the following year, we had 1,000 people taking part across Australia, which I was stoked by. It's like, this is awesome. The app, I improved it, had all these new features in it. You can do all these new things. Like, this is great. After year two, 1,000 people involved. I said to the mates, all right, let's celebrate. This is great. And we did what any bunch of guys in Perth would do to celebrate. We went over to Bali for a few days and, hit the waves and had a bit of fun. But coming back, or even out in the surf there, I realized I felt quite unfit. Went and saw a doctor who quickly referred me to a cardiologist who told me that my heart was in a bad way and that I needed to have work done on it. Didn't really like that news. Spoke to some other cardiologists who confirmed, yes, I needed to have open heart surgery in the very, very near future. And so that hit me very poorly. I got depressed hearing that I couldn't exercise for a while. I'd be at risk of having to go on, warfarin and not be able to, drink and eat funky foods and all that. I went downhill and I started rejecting my mates, started rejecting my family, withdrew from work, withdrew from life. And it was a low point. So I thought, let's do something more for mental health. Let's build this push-up challenge into something real, something big. And so there with my laptop, plenty of time in bed, completely bored with Netflix and all that, I thought, yeah, let's build a push-up challenge. And so that's when it was on, and put a stack more effort into it, developed all this, you know, developed a website and app and marketing stuff. And yeah, that year we had about 50,000 people taking part across Australia, which was just, yeah, mind-blowing.
As I kind of touched on before, we've got Julie, who's a psychologist that comes onto this podcast regularly, and she talks about like a few things that helps, I guess, with your mental resilience, and that is purpose, being physical, connections, and being out in nature. And just listening to you as you're going through that post-surgery stage where you couldn't do much, you had a purpose. You were trying to do something physical and you were creating connections. Now, I don't know if you could go outside and enjoy nature or you had a nice window there or whatever, but like you're kind of hitting three out of those four really key ingredients. And if I think about like what the push-up challenge is actually doing, like it's hitting off so many of those things that we know play such a big role into our mental fitness.
Coming out of that surgery, and you know, for a while you can't do much, but I knew as soon as I was, you know, well enough to, you know, walk a reasonable amount, it's on. I'm throwing everything at it because I was still quite depressed. I am trying to get my sleep back on track, eating well, time in nature, time with good people, and that sense of purpose, you know, that was incredibly prominent and real for me. And deliberately, you know, moving in those dimensions and trying to make all those happen. At the same time with the push-up challenge, how do I nurture a community of people to do the same? That's one of the reasons why the push-up challenge has been so successful, is it's got all those elements of goodness and it's fun.
So push-ups, 3,214, why that many?
Yeah, so this year in 2025, we're encouraging Australians to take on that many because 3,214 represents the number of Australians who tragically took their own lives in 2023, which is the last year of measured data. It's a number we want to do something about. We've had participants taking part and contacting us, and I've met, you know, many of them who will tell me, Nick, my brother, my dad, my sister, my son, gosh, was one of those. You know, 3,214. It's heartbreaking, but it's also really motivating.
Is one of your business goals for the push-up challenge, given that there's the last count was 3,214 people that took their lives in 2023, would one of your goals for the business to not have to exist?
Yes, absolutely. So if we're successful and the whole village is successful, then that number should reduce over time to get, you know, close to, if not to zero. Then the challenge to us will be, how do we continue to maintain our mental fitness, our resilience, so when those things do happen, we've got a better chance of getting through them?
I absolutely love this term of mental fitness. Like, I think, yeah, mental health or a mental disease or whatever you want to call it, I feel like mental fitness brings across these connotations of something you can actually do about it. And I know you're not a trained psychologist or mental health, or maybe you are a mental health expert or trained in that field, but what are some tips that you can give people to work on their mental fitness?
Mental fitness is a term that's getting more and more discussion at the moment, more airtime. It's fantastic. I can tell you my interpretation of it. I can also tell you what it's not, right? So there are some things out there that suggest that mental fitness is about keeping your brain alert and whatnot. You know, those games that, you know, help. You know, there's problem-solving games with apps or websites, etc. That, you know, say, I'll do this and you'll be more mentally fit. I'm not sure about that. It's certainly not what we're aiming for, okay? We're aiming for ability to adapt. So encouraging or enabling people's ability to adapt when those bad things happen. What works for me with my mental fitness are the dimensions we just talked about and little things within there around diet, exercise, time in nature, time with people, time with, I'm going to say good people, but what I mean by that is people you get along with, people who make you laugh and who you can make laugh, and then sleep. And I leave sleep to last, but it's really number one. If you haven't got your sleep right, everything else is just so, so challenging. And so what we did in 2024 with the push-up challenge is we had Melbourne University do a study on the event. Well, they set up this study to help, you know, measure the impacts of the event on people. And, you know, we surveyed over 40,000 people taking part in the event to see the impact on them on their mental fitness pre-event and post-event, and then 3 months down the track. So, you know, the lasting, you know, lingering impacts. The results were just amazing in terms of people's ability to adapt to change, the severity of anxiety symptoms, the severity of depression symptoms, all these good things came from it, which just validated our model, and just makes me want to do more in this space. So I've got my own little things that I do. I'm not always super diligent with them. Staying off the phone for a while before you switch off the lights, eating not too close to your sleep time, caffeine intake. I think people are familiar with these things. The trick is just discipline. A great way to stay disciplined around this is, yeah, having that structure, being clear on that structure and sticking to it, and having others help you stay honest with that structure. So if you do live with others, you know, a little bit of banter, a little bit of stick, if you're not, you know, aligning to those guidelines, can help. Time in nature is another big one for me as well, which I have grown to appreciate more and more. So I think in Japan they call it forest bathing. So deliberately walking through, you know, a green space and letting all that sink in. And there was a study done on this actually a couple of years ago about people go running through, you know, forests or whatever, or around the park with, you know, earbuds in or headphones in. And they looked at the impact of a 5K run or whatever distance was, people who used earbuds or headphones versus those who didn't. And those who didn't, it was a much more of a positive impact. Oh, yeah, I found that really interesting. I also found that really disappointing because I thought, well, that's a shame because I love being able to try and multitask, go walk around my local lake where it's all green, listen to a podcast, and, you know, I'm learning and I'm looking after my mental fitness at the same time. Well, yes, but to get the true impact, you really need to immerse yourself in it.
I guess it's you do you. Like whatever works for you. If you find that's relaxing, I know we sometimes, and I'm very big on studies and evidence-based analytical thinking brain, but if it works for you and you find that you chill with a podcast or some music, totally okay too.
Absolutely. And you hear, you know, GPs say this, you know, more and more often, that, you know, you ask a GP, oh, what's the best form of exercise? And they'll say, whatever's the one you're most likely to do. Say the science said that running is the best form of exercise, right? And say you're not a runner. Well, then what do you do? If you're not a runner, you don't enjoy running, but you're being forced to run, you're not going to enjoy it. You're going to try it for a few days, a week, or maybe a month. Then you're going to, you know, revert back to your safe zone. So I mean, it's worth giving a shot. But if you can find that exercise you really enjoy doing, there's a lot of value in that.
Now, I've got two things here because I know you do a lot of things with schools as well. The leading cause of death in children under the age of 17 is suicide. It's overtaken transport accidents, which is a huge issue. How are you working with schools to get these kids involved?
It's a really grim stat, isn't it? But it's so real. So we're trying to get more and more schools involved in the push-up challenge. And a few years ago, we kicked off our student ambassador program. I think last year we had over I think about 500 schools involved across Australia in our student ambassador program. It's something where we're continuing to grow, to really get into the minds of young people. We had a school in regional New South Wales, a place called Dungog, take part in the push-up challenge a few years ago. And they had a couple of students approach their principal about, taking on the push-up challenge. In the first year, they were going to take it on their school. And the principal initially was a little bit hesitant. They weren't, scholars. And they weren't known for these sorts of initiatives or showing much initiative at the school. The principal took a punt on them. He gave them, let them have a crack, and they smashed it out of the park. And they brought all these conversations to the school, this new focus and this new way of looking at mental health. And when I hear stories like that, it makes me so proud to be able to bring the push-up challenge to Australians, but also schools.
And now I also want to link it back to construction as well, because at the end of the day, we do have a lot of construction people listening to this podcast. In the construction industry, you're 2 times more likely to die from suicide compared to other males. And you're 6 times more likely to die by suicide compared to a workplace accident. These are ABS study statistics as well. They're, again, pretty grim. But and we'll get into a minute on how you can sign up and participate in this challenge. But I feel as an industry being predominantly men, and men, as we've probably spoken about through this podcast and through all podcasts and known as society, the men don't speak up as much. It's the reality. It's the reality that 97% of our industry are men. It's only going to be more likely that men are going to take their lives. I think that something needs to be done about it personally. But as an industry, how can we participate in signing up? And how do we as an industry get involved? And Hamish, we might have a chat about doing something where we can sign up under the Mindful Builder and get as many people.
I've already got that. I've already got that written down.
We'll pass it on to you.
The Mindful Builder push-up group. I love it.
Yeah. We'll have a chat about something we can do. But just, Nick, before I've got one last question for you, how do we sign up?
Yeah. So to get involved in push-up challenge, it's easy. It's free to take part. Facebook in June each year. There you go. Maybe just got the app firing up.
You know, I'm going to have all this spare time in the middle of the night coming up when I'm up late at night because the baby's not sleeping. I'm going to be smashing push-ups.
So, yeah, if people do want to join, Google the push-up challenge. It should come up as number one or pretty close to it, and get involved from there. You can take part by yourself or with a team, with your mates, workmates, etc. It's free and easy. If you do want to fundraise, so people have the option of fundraising for mental health along the way if they want, but you don't have to, right? If fundraising is your thing, or if you want to do it by yourself, not the team, go for it. We'd love to have you involved. If push-ups aren't your thing, then, you can do other things as well. You can do sit-ups, squats, lunges, modified push-ups. Feel free to mix it up. And we get a lot of people who start on day one and then burn out. Like they go really hard on day one, and then day two, they can't move their arms. So day one in particular, I spread them out over the day and throw in some alternatives. My dad takes part. He does wall push-ups, which are fine. I'd certainly encourage those. We had a 105-year-old take part a few years ago, and he was doing wall push-ups as well. So come all, very easy to get involved. Again, it's free, and it's hopefully get to learn about mental health a little bit along the way as well.
But what are some of the organisations that you support in the push-up challenge?
So, so this year we're supporting Headspace, Lifeline, and our own foundation, the Push for Better Foundation. And so people can choose who they're fundraising for. There are a number of Headspace and Lifeline centres across Australia. In fact, combined, there's almost 200. There's the option for you to fundraise for one of your, to support your local community by selecting a centre. It's based on Lifeline Centre that's close to you. Again, fundraising is optional. We certainly encourage it. We'd love you to support. We'd love people to support their local communities. But we also understand that sometimes people financially just aren't in a position to donate, or they're not comfortable asking their friends and family for donations, which is all right. If they do want to fundraise, bring it on. We've got a bunch of tools to help you out.
Nick, I'll finish on this. You've raised $50 million for mental health. What does that mean to you?
It's a number we're really proud of. Also, I love the fundraising component. It's not actually a fundraising event. It's a participation event. And what really motivates me is getting people involved. And we have people reach out to us and say, oh, it's because of the push-up challenge that they've started exercising again. It's because of the push-up challenge that they've been able to connect with their mates. It's because of the push-up challenge that they've learned all this new stuff about mental health. And that's the stuff that really motivates me, yeah, to do more in this space. So the fundraise is pretty cool. And I'm super proud to be able to support, you know, Lifeline and Headspace with what they do. But it's the participation that really, really motivates me.
And I think it's also the numbers that you'll never know, and that's the numbers that you've helped and, you know, not become part of that 3,214 statistic of people taking their lives, because I'm absolutely no doubt that this event has saved probably more lives than you know. So well done, Nick. Amazing.
We are the type of people that we get an idea and we now run with it. And I can only imagine our brains just go left and right. And I can just imagine the phone call I'm about to have with Hamish about what we're going to do with this. But I can tell you now, and I'm going to speak on Hamish's behalf, that we're going to do something with this. We're going to get as many builders, architects, engineers, building designers, interior designers, whoever. We're going to create a Mindfield Builder little page for this. And we're going to do something pretty special to not only support you, Nick, and your foundation, but also, more importantly, support those who are in need, because it's something that I know Hamish is passionate about, something that I'm deeply passionate about. Unfortunately, my cousin is a statistic in that number. And so for me, it's something that I really hold close to my chest and feel very passionate about. So, mate, thank you so much for coming on today.
Pleasure, Matt. Thanks, Hamish. It's been great being on your podcast.